Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Love Babs Love Talk on Babs Rolls Ivy. If you just tuned in, you're in for a real treat. I have Madeline Sayet. She is executive director of the Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program. And with her are playwrights. Well, I see one playwright, Sierra Rosetta. But the other three playwrights are Blossom Johnson and Dylan Chito. Did I say that right?
I think that's pretty close. If he were here, he could correct you.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome. I had no knowledge of the ninth annual Native Play Festival. I had no knowledge of this. So when the Schwartzman Center said, "Hey, we're doing this, and we would love for you to talk to these wonderful, talented folks," I jumped at the chance. Like I jumped. So it's in this ninth year. Tell me about this. And Madeline, how did you come to it?
Yeah, thanks so much, Babs. So originally, the Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program was originally founded. It came out of it was 2014 or 2015 now. We brought a performance of Mary Catherine Nagle's play, Sliver of a Full Moon, about the Violence Against Women Act, to the Yale Law School. And when we did that program, it triggered Ned Blackhawk, who's a professor at Yale, to really think about the ways in which our stories as Native peoples are our sovereignty. And so this program, the Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program, was created. But like many small programs, especially Native programs, it took kind of a while to find its footing. And so those first years, Dylan was actually the winner of so basically right after that, we started this program. One of the earliest programs of YIPAP, of the Indigenous Performing Arts Program, was the Young Native Playwrights Contest. And that was specifically an opportunity for playwrights 25 and under to have a development opportunity for a play and support that. And Dylan was actually the winner of that contest the second year. But at that stage, the program was still in really, really small theaters on campus, you know, in classrooms sometimes. And so it's grown over time to this year. The Yale Schwartzman Center is partnering with us, and all of our programming, we bring in professional directors and Native actors, and we also develop a couple professional playwrights' works alongside the emerging playwright to sort of bring them into the community and make them understand that they're already, you know, a part of the professional theater network. And the reason that this opportunity for someone 25 and under specifically was created is because there are so few opportunities for Native writers that, you know, if you're applying against the people who are, you know, at the very top tier, who have their plays, you know, on these off-Broadway theaters, it's pretty hard to sort of break in. And so giving this opportunity every year specifically for playwrights 25 and under has meant that not only do I get to read the most exciting work, because it's all the stuff building off of the generations before, you know, the stuff that's really innovating, like Sierra's amazing play from the Old Wood Forest, but also getting to decide which playwrights each year audiences might want to see in partnership with them. And so we're really excited to be able to chat with you and to be able to spread the word about three amazing plays this year. It might be that because we're all across time zones right now, it's possible that the other two playwrights might have miscalculated. But I know that they were originally very excited to be here as well.
Listen, I understand that because I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And the time thing it's just hard. So no worries. So this is what I know. Tuesday, April 23rd, Dark Earth by Blossom Johnson.
That's right.
Directed by Daniel Lehman Smith, who is Choctaw. And that's what it has in parentheses.
Yep.
And then Wednesday, April 24th at 7:30, From the Old Wood Forest by Sierra Rosette. And you're the Young Native winner. Are you the Young Native contest winner? Congratulations.
Yes.
Wow. And your play is directed by Tara Moses, who is Seminole.
Mm-hmm.
You look mighty young to be talking about the 1960s.
Yeah, it's my parents. I was not
around. So tell me about your play, From the Old Wood Forest, Sierra.
Yeah. It's a story that I've heard throughout my entire life. My dad was adopted from Hayward, Wisconsin, where his grandpa grew up on a reservation, the Lacouture Chippewa Nation there, right outside of Hayward, Wisconsin. And he reconnected with his birth mom when he was 20. And so he's kind of learned things about his birth dad. His birth dad died when my grandma was pregnant with my dad. So he's kind of, hearing about it from these other people who were in his life and hearing about his grandpa and his family's journey with racism and generational trauma and things that happened on and off the reservation. And also my grandma's story about when she was a teen mom in a very racist family, having a mixed race child, and just kind of all the drama that ensued from that with her dad and her brothers. And what initially like really piqued my interest of turning this into a play was my grandma told us that after my grandpa died, she would have this recurring dream of him, and they would talk in the lobby of their high school gym where they first met, because it's kind of like West Side Story. They met at a high school dance, winter formal dance, very much that cliche. And yeah, she kind of, for 20 years until she met my dad in real life, until they were reunited, would have this dream where she would talk to him. And so that initially piqued my interest of, I was like, oh, this is a play, like this has a lot of drama. This has a lot of plot to it. And so I asked my grandma if I could tell her story, and yeah, she was very eager to have her story be told, because it's a crazy story, and most of what's in the play actually happened.
I love it. So, Madeline, you put a call out to Native artists under playwrights under 25, and what's the response like? And then how do you choose?
Yeah, I know, right? It's very hard. Yeah, no, it's been cool because it's gotten bigger each year. This year was actually really hard because there was a lot more response than we'd had in previous years, and a lot of the plays were very good. We ended up naming three finalists and then choosing Sierra's play. But there's a committee, so we put together a committee of professional Native theater artists, and it's always actually like really hard, you know what I mean? Because people have different opinions, there are different things they're drawn to, and ultimately, like, everyone has to form consensus and agree on which play is going to be chosen. But there's always a lot of really exciting plays out there, and I'm hoping that some of the people who weren't chosen this year will submit in future years. Sierra was a finalist in a previous year, and then resubmitted. So it's one of those things where I always say, like, just keep submitting. But it's just really exciting to get to work on Sierra's play, to get to have it on campus, to get to share it with people. It's such a beautiful story. It being a true story, I think, is also just really meaningful. And I feel like it's also great to have it with two other plays that feel very different. Blossom's play also takes place in a different time period, dealing with a mine, but it's not her personal story, yet it is about personal things to her. And Dylan's play is this sort of play that deals with this like queer supernatural space in which there's a trickster figure that's sort of a piece of his own invention, that is like a hybrid Americana trickster figure. So I think that there's a lot of exciting things about both being able to present Sierra's play and also being able to present it in conversation with these other playwrights who then can also serve as mentors for her beginning her professional journey.
So, Madeline and Sarah, what does it mean to have Native playwrights tell their own stories outside of the white gaze? Because I can't imagine, I mean, I can't imagine, I'm a woman of color, how hard it must be in the face of the way that Native folks are fetishized and the way that your history is not accurately told, and you're always the villain, and we're just now getting some of the history of what happened to children taken away from their families, and everybody and their mama is, saying these land acknowledgments that, which personally I cannot stand, but I understand it, but I cannot stand it. It's like, we stole this land from you. We want you to know we stole this land, and thank you.
Yeah, well,
But how do you, yes, talk to me about all of that.
I'm going to try and talk quickly and then let Sierra talk a little bit, because of it being her own personal story she's telling is very unique. But I think, well, one with land acknowledgments, it was supposed to be a first step, and instead it kind of turned into everyone being like, weirdly putting us in the past tense and being like, they were once here, they're now gone, we thank them. And I'm like, wait, but wait, what is ha this was supposed to be a first step toward like an ongoing partnership where, but yeah, so for a lot of Native stories, you're right, and even when they are told at professional like white mainstream theaters, they're often like kind of censored or altered to be under what that institution expects or what their gaze is. So anytime we have programs like this where we're able to just all come together as Native community in our own power, it's incredibly important because it really like not only artistically gives audiences a chance to see what our stories are actually like, but emotionally is a space of reclamation to be in a space where you know that the directors and the dramaturgs are also Native people, that they're not trying to turn it into something that the story isn't or doesn't want to be, has always been for me a space of healing. And that's why I really have liked running the program as a Mohegan artist, to be able to be like, okay, this is the space we have to be together as community. And we don't have to listen to those other voices during that time. We can still invite them in to listen to us, you know, to share our stories with them, but that it won't be that we have to curtail to their way of seeing the world. And Sierra, yeah, is there anything that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I first came to Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program about 2 years ago as an actor, just meeting people through auditions and directors. And it was the first time I remember being in a Zoom room with all Native folks. And my heart just was so happy because my dad was adopted. I grew up in a, you know, very white town, and my sister and I were like the only Native folks at the college that we went to. And so I remember just feeling like, oh, this just, it's so special to me. And especially the fact that it's Native directors and, you know, actors and like other Native playwrights, it just means a lot to be in that space. Cause it's just something I never see, especially I've been in academia my whole life. I'm now in grad school. And right now I'm in a show where there's one other Native actor. And even just that, we're like, yes, this never happens. So yeah, this program just really means a lot to me.
Madeline, when they win this contest or when they come to this, where do they take these plays? Like, where does the work go? Is it produced other places? Do they take it other places? Does winning here green light them taking it somewhere else? What happens?
Yeah, I mean, it varies. It doesn't automatically. There was a point where we tried to set up an automatic partnership where it would be like, you now get immediately a production. But it was tricky just given all of the financial straits of the other theater at the time. But a lot of the plays have been produced afterwards. It's I think that people then hear about it. They know about it. Our Native theater community isn't that big, you know? So mm-hmm. So a lot of those plays, you know, they have that first development opportunity, and then it puts them out there so that other theaters and other Native theaters also can hear about and continue to support that work. And also, like, we all continue, like, right, as a community to continue to pitch it to other theaters as well. That helps. Once we know about something, it's so much easier to support something than when you don't know about it. And so any opportunity to bring people into community is really helpful. I mean, part of the reason why, you know, you probably haven't heard about it is because, one, originally the program was kind of private at Yale, but two, during the sort of shutdown period, we actually ended up having to hold the festival due to like COVID protocols on Zoom for much longer than a lot of other things, for about 3 years. But what mm-hmm. that did was it actually opened up our network a lot, because so many Native theater artists then didn't have to travel to be involved. And anytime we held a class, instead of it just being available to students on Yale campus, we could open it up and make it available to Native artists across the nation. And so that was a really important moment for us as community to be able to, instead of bringing 20 artists to campus, right, we could have 70 something artists gathering together in these Zoom spaces. And that means that now whenever someone like Sierra writes a play, it's that much faster that we can make sure that we spread the word about that play and move it toward a production.
Oh, I like that. I like that. So Sierra, did you always know you wanted to be an performer, an actor, or was it a writer, or like, what's the path?
Well, I started as an actor, like in community theater as a kid. My mom put me in that stuff. My mom was my high school speech and drama coach. So I kind of was just born into that. But I started playwriting when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And
wow.
I would ask my friends to put them on at sleepovers. And there's some footage of it on YouTube that is now private. It's very embarrassing. But yeah, I've always, like, I wanted to be an author when I was younger, and then really got into playwriting in undergrad, started taking classes in it, and then really moved into supporting new work as a dramaturg as well. I'm primarily a dramaturg now. And so I just love being surrounded by new work all the time as a writer's assistant. And yeah, I never thought that like my own play would be like spoken aloud by other people. But it's really cool to kind of have this happen like for the first time. But yeah, it's always something I've really loved.
So Madeline, the native voices, not just in theater but in film. I mean, is there conversation, like, can some of these become films? Because I mean, there's a very popular film out right now by Martin Scorsese, and people buzz about it, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think that well, Sierra's actually play is very filmic. Some committee members even wrote about the fact that like it already reads like it could be translated into a film very easily. But I think similarly in film, it's that same conversation, right? Of that particular film that you're referencing, which is about a very violent period in Osage history. Like it was amazing that they were able to do that with Osage support and fabulous Native actors like Lily Gladstone. But again, ultimately the goal is, right, always for Native people to be telling their own stories. And so there's also a lot of Native films that do that, that haven't gotten quite to the level of recognition, but because of other people being able to be platformed, like Lily being able to be platformed, she was able to push for more recognition for another film that she was in that was Native directed. And so all of us can just kind of keep step by step, right? Like lifting each other up. And so I have seen a lot of playwrights also cross over as TV writers. Mary Catherine Nagle, who previously ran the Indigenous Performing Arts Program and who was that initial play that started the program, has done some TV writing now. Vera Starbard, who we've presented her works as part of our festival. She does a lot of TV writing now as well. So there's definitely a lot of crossover. It's a matter of whether or not Sierra wants to do that, but I think that it's a question of accessibility. And so sometimes, Native writers really appreciate the fact that, like in theater, you can really be with community, but in TV and film, if you're trying to reach folks who maybe can't get there's a lot of access that it offers to tell our stories as well.
And so when you are trying to center Native voices, does it feel like you are not only telling a story but re-educating people about who Native people are? I mean, that seems like a heavy load, a heavy lift. But does that when you create something, are you always thinking, okay, now I got to go back and re-educate people about what this is?
It can be. Yeah, I just finished a national tour of a solo play where a lot of it was, like my personal experience, but a lot of it was also me having to teach people about my nation, and with the assumption that people, whatever they knew about Mohegans was probably wrong, right? So that act of constantly having to break yourself out of a box that's built by not yourself, but built by whatever illusions, Hollywood and the history of red face in America have sort of created for you before you even got there. So it's really meaningful to be able to spend this time together. And Blossom and Dylan, I'm sorry they're not here, but they're also such incredible playwrights with such different voices. Blossom probably she just had a her play her boarding school play up in San Francisco this weekend. And Dylan I know has a couple other workshops of different plays, at least one in Santa Fe this summer. And it's just so great to see all these different voices from different nations. I think that's a big part of it, right? The responsibility not only to tell your story as an artist, but knowing that people may have never heard about your entire nation, your native nation before. And what is that responsibility in terms of how they're being represented in public? What are the protocols for that? Who do you have to ask in your own nation to get permissions? Sometimes can be really complicated and way more responsibility, right, than like a lot of other playwrights have to deal with. And so I'm sure that Sierra, you've had your own journey with like knowing you're telling a personal story, how you feel responsibility to your elders and to your ancestors and telling that story as well.
Yeah.
So is that always at the forefront, Sierra? Like, how do you honor and respect the past and in this moment? Like, is that a responsibility that you take on, that you step into? Is it, or you're like, I'm just an artist.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that, especially with this show, I had to really grapple with. I actually didn't let my grandma read it for a really long time, like until pretty recently. Because she's not in theater, and really no one else besides my immediate family is in theater. And so I had to explain to her very carefully that, like, based on a true story. And I was like, okay, so, like, these things are changed. I had to, like, kill off this character. And I was like, it is inspired by your story, but it's not completely. Because, imagine someone writing a play about the worst things ever happened to you and then reading that, but she ended up loving it. Like, I think, to like quote her, she said, she's like, I read it as a play, but I felt the reality of our relationship in your words, or like something along that line. Yeah, and asking my grandpa's family, like our native cousins and aunts, who we know now because of my dad reconnecting with her. Yes, yeah, so that it felt like a. I was very nervous at first, telling her story specifically, but in terms of like my other work and, you know, outside of playwriting, but as dramaturg and director and everything, kind of my native artist statement always starts with, I've had several people in my life tell me that they thought all Native Americans were extinct, like with all sincerity. And that's, just, I never know what to say. And so, yeah, a lot of my work is just, and, you know, I love Madeline's work with the whole, like, sometimes it gets tiring. You have to continually educate people, but it's like, it breaks my heart that people think that, you know, Native Americans aren't, that they're just a part of history and they aren't today. They aren't present people. Yeah. And so in terms of like all of my work as a whole, that feels like a pretty, big message that I try to put out of like, we exist.
And I mean, it seems like that would be a really heavy load to constantly have to remind people that, you know, we are here. Our families are here. we live, we breathe, we're carrying on tradition. You know, that must be very, very exhausting, I think, to have to re-educate people before you can even bring them into the circle of your artistry.
It is. We try and do it with a lot of humor also. And I think that that's why it's better when we're in community like this. Like, I remember doing my play, Where We Belong. It was probably the hardest one I've ever done because I was alone, you know? It's like when you're doing a play by yourself, it's like, oh, this is so, it's like one, it's like too much load, you know? But when you're able to like tell these stories with other Native people, I think that's when, you know, you're able to be able to laugh about it. You're able to be able to make jokes about it. And some of these plays, like, you know, have the most, you know, terrible, sad moments next to the moments that just make you laugh so hard you cry. And I think that that's sort of like, you know, an attribute to a lot of Native peoples and everything that we've survived, but also just a really helpful tool for audiences to be able to understand. Because so much of what people say, right, it's this, when they're encountering Native theater for the first time, they're either so excited to learn or they're like, oh, I feel like I'm getting some kind of lesson. And it's like, well, like, if you'd known before, if we had been educated, if our school systems had taught you anything about Native peoples, then it would have been so much easier for us because we wouldn't have had to give all that information in the play, you know?
I feel everything about that because, you know, every time a slave movie comes out, Madeline and Sierra, you know, my nerves and I value them because, you know, there are stories that have to be, some of them have to be told, but yeah. I'm telling you, every time I see one, I'm like, can we tell another story? Like, does our pain have to be on display? But it's necessary because, like you just said, Madeline, if we got this education in school, then we could cut to the chase. We could get to higher ground. We could get to another level, but we have to like go back and like, this is what this is. This is how this happened. This is how we, you know. So do you ever feel like that you can tell a story without, I don't even know if I want to ask it this way. Every Native story is not ripe with trauma. Mm-hmm. Can I say that? Is that yeah. true?
I think it shows up. I would say this is actually a good question. I think that there's a little bit of intergenerational trauma that might show up in different ways, but I will say that there are a lot of stories that are imagining possible futures and that are ripe with Native joy. And so I think there's a lot of expectation that the relationship between Native peoples in stories will always be between us and colonialism, but actually it doesn't have to be, right? We can imagine these worlds beyond that. We can engage in stories that are solely our communities. That doesn't mean a lot of it doesn't engage with that, because there's so much intergenerational harm that's happening, harm that's still happening. That's a lot of stories do have that dynamic, but it varies. It varies how much that is present. And ultimately, like a lot of my work now, like after having had done like a show like over and over again, where I had to deal with a lot of like not only my harm, but my ancestral harm, like going being like inhabiting many generations of my family. All I want to work on now, right, is these plays that imagine forward, where we can laugh together and we can have that joy space, because we need that as part of our healing as much as anything else.
And so tell me, what does native joy look like? What is joyful in native culture and native understanding?
I mean, Sierra, I don't know if you have an answer to this, but I think it's a lot of different things. I think it's a matter of just like how can we be in community and celebrate each other? How can we have comedies? You know, like Vera Starbird has this adaptation, Native Pride and Prejudice, that we were able to do a workshop of, gosh, many, it feels like many years ago now, at Yip App, but we're still hoping for there to be a production of it, because it's like everybody reads its favorite play. It's just a big show, so it's expensive to produce. But it's this play in which the issues of social class that are in the original Pride and Prejudice are transposed to issues of blood quantum. And so everybody's trying to, you know, for a real political reason, are trying to get these people partnered with people with high enough blood quantum that their kids can stay enrolled in their nations. But while that's an important political issue, it's still Pride and Prejudice, right? And so it's still ridiculous. And Vera's also inserted all of these like feminist revisions, right? Because they're Alaska Native women. They're not gonna be doing any of that dumb stuff that the original women do. And whenever we work on it, it feels like this like mad, wild kind of like trickster paradise where everybody's just getting to have fun. You know what I mean? There is a political context, but you get to have like silly romances, right? You get to have like all of these things. It doesn't have to be like, oh, we're being colonized and we're dying, which is sometimes what theaters expect when they're looking for a native play.
Yes.
As opposed to, right, like all of the fullness of the, and also having a full native cast sometimes also like feels like that, right? Because you don't end up with just one character, one type of character. You end up with like a whole bunch of different people doing all sorts of different kinds of crazy things, and also Indigenous futurisms, right, tend to embody a lot of Native joy, because we're imagining to a world where our problems are different than our problems right now. But honestly, even if you see the plays in this festival, I feel like there's a lot of Native joy in them, in that they're constantly reimagining things. That Dylan's play, his other play that was in the festival, Bingo Hall, was just like a community coming of age story that felt a little rom-com, felt a little silly, you know, that I remember when I first read that, it really blew my mind. But in his new play, Pigeon, that's being done, like the structure of family is like a queer community that's like a chosen family. And mm-hmm. and the sort of enemy isn't colonialism, but this trickster that exists within their own culture and their own mind. So that's a very long answer. But basically, I mean, one time it was the fact that, like, you know, my friend Kenny Ramos said he wanted to fly and was mad at Peter Pan. So we made a version of the story where he could fly. You know, it just depends on what you're reclaiming any given day and what the community feels is joyous at that moment.
So where are these plays being produced? Because I know Tuesday, April 23rd at 7:30, Dark Earth, is we can see that Wednesday, April 24th at 7:30, From the Old Wood Forest, Sierra's play, and Thursday, April 25th, Pigeon by Dylan. So where I know they're at Schwartzman, or are they in Schwartzman?
They are. They're all going to be in the Dome at Schwartzman Center.
Okay.
Yeah, so you'll be able to find them right there every day of the week at 7:30 for free. You can register online, and we hope to see a good turnout this year, now that we're able to partner with the community to be able to invite more people into those experiences.
And that makes sense, don't you think, to open this up so there's no longer just private. It's people can come and see what Native plays are about and get a real education and some real entertainment. Entertainment in the
theater.
Sense that quality theater.
Yeah.
So Sierra, are you nervous for a bigger audience to see your work now? Or like, what is that like?
I mean, it's the first time I'll hear it out loud. I've just been redrafting it for a year and a half. So I, you know, can read it in my head and have my sister, you know, kind of play all seven characters. But yeah, I'm super excited. And also, yeah, you know, nervous to hear it out loud and be like, oh, I'm going to have to like rewrite the whole thing because it sounds horrible out loud now. But yeah, I'm super excited about like the few like cast members that have been cast so far that I know. And working with Tara is like a dream director for any show I could ever possibly work on. Tara Moses, I've worked with her a few times, and she's just really lovely and talented director. So I'm super excited.
I love this. So, Madeline, opening this up, I mean, this has got to be a win for you to sort of, allow a bigger audience to see, what is going on with this, with the Indigenous playwrights.
Yeah, well, and as a native person from Connecticut, I feel like it's particularly meaningful because we haven't had a lot of native representation on our stages, and when we have, it's like the only play, right? The only native play that's really been produced was Manna-Hata, which Mary Catherine's work is beautiful, but again,
And I saw that. I saw it.
yeah. Oh, great. Oh, good. Yeah, but it is back in that time. You are very much dealing with the onslaught of colonialism, and so this way people get to see what else is out there. And I just think it's really meaningful to be able to now spread the word so that people know that this is happening. I mean, I think there's lots of theater goers, like, in the New Haven area, who would be thrilled to see these plays, to learn about these playwrights. It's just a matter of like creating that access and getting the word out there. So we're also really grateful for you, to you, Babs, for like allowing this time to like talk about this, just because it is tricky when you're like a really small program sandwiched in between something else to even like have a way to talk about it or to spread the word to other people.
Oh no, I'm delighted. When they came to me and said, could I was like, are you kidding me? How could I not? Because I think this is a way to center voices, native voices in a way that is long overdue. And if I hear one more land acknowledgement, I mean, I told this at the Arts Council when we had an event. I said, for every time somebody says land acknowledgement, they ought to put some money toward Indigenous and Native work. Like, if you're going to say it, then put some money to it so that artists can continue on. And I mean that because it's time to be about the business of centering all these voices. And we can't talk about diversity for real if we don't talk about Native voices as well. So I appreciate y'all coming on this morning, Madeline and Sierra. I'm going to do my very best to get to all three of them so that I can just have a flavor for this and an awareness. And Madeline, anytime you've got something going on, come back. Just reach out. Consider this your platform. Seriously. So, all right, Sierra, break a leg.
Thank you so much, Babs.
Break a leg. Thank you all so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Harry. I think we are on our way out. This was a darn good morning to talk. I've enjoyed talking to Madeline Sayette. I've enjoyed talking to the young Miss Sierra, who is a blossoming playwright in her own right. And it was a good time. So I will be back tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow I am not talking to anyone. So I'll be here just my lonesome. And then back at it on Thursday and Friday with guests. So thank y'all for hanging out. Thank y'all for listening. I appreciate y'all greatly. Have a good one. Thank you, Harry.